It begins when one finds things happening like a war being waged in one's own country and another. They do not kill the prisoners, but tie them with rope and take them to the town, saying to them, "You stay as our slaves." So they stay and marry among themselves. If they have children, their children are slaves just the same. Yazare.
Yawizo.
Once again, welcome to an episode of Africa's Untold Stories.
Yes.
As per usual, my name is... Oh, no, sorry, no. My name is Brian, and your name is...
I thought you forgot your name for a second. My name is Sarah.
Yeah, great, awesome. So, what I just read at the beginning, the opening quote, is from an account of, well, a man who spoke with a Swahili who lived around the 1800s. Now, this native Swahili man was speaking about the conditions under which, well, slavery exists in their land. And I picked just a short extract from it, but it goes on to talk about some of the circumstances that leads to a person being a slave, and how you can become a slave, and how you can also what exempts certain people from becoming slaves. If you've already listened to our previous episode on slavery in Western Africa, then you are welcome for episode 2 on slavery in Eastern Africa.
Okay, so we are taking the East today.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, this was very highly requested. Like, we got comments from people saying there better be a part 2 and 3. And I mean, looks like people have been looking forward to this grim discussion. So
yes. Yeah. So yeah, we've read some of the feedback that we got. Oh, which reminds me, so we can't actually reply to the feedback, which I just found out recently, and I think it doesn't make sense.
That kind of sucks.
But
that sucks very bad.
Yeah, it sucks. But yeah, we see the comments left in the podcast section, the Spotify. We appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And there was one, yes, the one about using Berber alongside Imazighen in the previous episode.
Oh yes, that was a comment from Zara.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, we've taken note. We'll take it out. We do know that some Imazighen have issues with the use of Berbers to refer to them. It's kind of like their N-word, I guess. Mm-hmm. The only reason we left it there initially was because some people are unfamiliar with the Imazighen or Amazigh term. Yeah. So we use that side by side. But yeah, we've got the message. We'll take that part out since that's the preference. I mean, we are not from there anyway. Yeah. So
also, if there's a better way
to listen,
like spread the awareness, I think we'll be open to the suggestion as well. So we see the comments and we are happy about them. So let's get back to it. To the one that was really requested, a part 2 of slavery in Africa.
Yes. Slavery in Africa. This episode is also a rather wild one. I mean, there nothing can beat the West African slavery. That was that's something else. But East African is slavery is also disturbing and troubling in its own way, and also fascinating. So some instances. So what we are going to do, for those of you who don't know, East Africa, I don't remember the number of countries, maybe like 15, 14 countries or something. There is Sudan, South Sudan, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania. What's this other place called? Rwanda, Burundi. I think I got them all. I think it's like 9. Oh, wait. Somalia.
Somalia, Comoros.
That's 10. Djibouti, Comoros.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's like what 13 in total.
Yeah.
If we are not mistaken.
12 or 13.
Yeah, 13.
Some people add Madagascar to East Africa, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's its location is weird. It's like east, south. It's like it can fit anywhere, really.
I know.
So.
Okay.
But now anyway, so what we're going to do is, yeah, we're in East Africa. And what we are going to do is we are going to split, well, the considerations into three sections, because although it's East, all of it is East Africa, the slavery that is practiced over there, is, there are some, there are cultural differences. And so, of course, that would come all the way down into how they, you know, do slavery and all of those kind of things. The first part we're going to consider would be the Horn of Africa.
Okay.
Well, let me say one of the three parts is the Horn of Africa side of things. Then the other part we are going to consider the Great Lakes region. So, for those who don't know, the Great Lakes region is a part in Eastern Africa. And the countries that border the Great Lakes region or find themselves in the Great Lakes region would be Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, Kenya, Tanzania. Okay. But so the Great Lakes region is like close to the borders that these sides all share, kind of, right? And then the last part we will consider would be the coastal, East African coast, which was dominated by the Swahili speakers. So yeah, that part is going to be mainly just Swahili, but okay. Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's where the quote you read in the beginning came from.
Yeah. Yeah. All so right. That's where the quote I read in the beginning came from.
Okay.
First things first.
Okay.
I don't think we have to redefine slavery and all of those things with that in the previous episode with the West African one. So please go back and listen if you haven't before. But to continue, we are going to start with the coastal side of things. I mean, we're going to do the same thing we did before, where with the West African one, we spoke a lot about general ones, and then we zoomed in into specific areas. Yes, but much like West African slavery, a person became a slave through pretty much the same means. You are either captured in war, or you are captured in a regular slave raid, or you pawn yourself, or someone pawns you, you know, to pay a debt, whatever. You commit a crime, and your punishment for that crime is that you become a slave, etc., etc. These whole different ways that, you know, you could become a slave, there are in certain areas, certain minute, depending on where you go, to certain minute things that would differ a bit. Now, if you start with the coastal side, right, and most of what we'll talk about today will probably be around the coastal side, because they dominated the slave trade and it was wild. So for those of you who don't know, right, the Swahili are a Bantu speaking ethnicity, right? And the Swahili language is actually is it the most spoken African language? I think so. The most widely spoken native African language is probably the Swahili language. It's spoken in a lot of East African countries. And the Swahili themselves are a lot. And they are people who migrated to the coast thousands of years ago. And eventually they started a trade with, well, the Arabians, Persians, and Indians, you know, in the Indian Ocean side of things, because that's where their coast is facing.
Yeah.
And one of the items, or, well, saying items is weird, but one of the commodities, saying commodities is weird, it's as well.
Weird. Yes. Okay. I think
you just go with. One of what was sold most often were human beings, okay. Slaves, right?
Yeah.
And so the East African slave trade was very much like the West African one, in the sense that there was an internal slavery going on within the kingdoms on Africa themselves, as well as what they were selling to other people, non-Africans. Among the Swahili, right, they would sometimes buy slaves from interior kingdoms. So the Swahili were on the coast. So maybe they'll buy slaves from people, from kingdoms that were deeper in the continent.
Okay.
They would get their slaves through war, slave raiding, whatever. Then they'll sell their slaves to the Swahilis. And the Swahili would keep some of the slaves for themselves, and then they'll sell some of the slaves to, you know, the foreigners. At some point, of course, the white people joined, and they were also getting some slaves. Mm. One of the interesting things is the Swahili themselves were slavers. They were big time slavers. You know how in the West African episode I singled out the Ashanti, yes, and the Dahomey. Mm-hmm. Yes, in the southern part of East Africa, the people that, from the research I was doing, that the names that occurred the most often are the Swahili and these other people called the Nyamwezi people.
Wow.
And the Yao. Like, they were the chief slave traders in that region. And okay. There another group that would come often is Arab.
Arab.
Now, okay.
Interesting.
A bit of background over here.
Uh-huh.
So when the Swahili eventually settled on the eastern coast of Africa, and then they started the trade with the Arabians, right, uh-huh, and the Persians, etc. Some of these Arabs and Persians settled in Swahili land,
okay,
and they mixed with certain groups of Swahili people. So when a Swahili is born and he has Arabian ancestry, it doesn't matter how small it is. If it is 50% or 5%, he classifies himself as an Arab.
Interesting.
Right. And over time, as the Swahilis became Islamized, they converted to Islam en masse, the whole idea of an Arab Swahili became, it was a very vague description, you know, because they aren't really Arabs.
Hmm.
You get it? They're more Swahili than they are Arabs. But because they were practicing Muslims, they saw themselves as Arabs.
Yeah.
And they saw the non-Muslims as, well, less than them. Yeah, that's a funny...
Yeah.
That's a funny thing. Unfortunately, it happened a lot. But it wasn't unique to the Swahilis in the sense that dominant cultures usually see the less powerful as less than them. Mm. It's all over the world. They always happen, and it happens now. It's just that at that time as well, they added a religious dimension to it.
Yeah.
Because they were like, we are Muslim, so we are superior, mm, kind of thing.
True.
And so let me just run you through some of the, I think the background is enough. We've not spoken a lot about slavery. So let me start going through somehow slavery worked in Swahili land,
okay,
at the eastern coast. So now this coastal area I'm talking about goes all the way from Kenya down to Mozambique.
Mm.
Not to the very south of Mozambique, maybe midway through Mozambique.
Okay, but entirely through Tanzania, basically. Kenya, Tanzania.
Entirely through Tanzania, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So Kenya from around Mombasa.
Mm. Okay.
And all the way down through, yeah. How the Swahilis got their slaves, they usually got them through, like I mentioned before, kings or chiefs in the interior selling to them. But one other way they got their slaves was slave raids, where these Swahilis themselves, or Arabs, or Swahili Arabs, however you want to call them,
mm-hmm,
would actually go into the interior and raid for slaves themselves.
Yeah.
Which is very wild to me.
Mm.
But it was something they did. They did it so much that at some point, one guy actually tried to form a kingdom in the interior. His name was Tipu Tip. Well, that was kind of like his moniker. He had an actual name. I don't quite remember.
But they called him Tipu Tip.
Yes, Tipu Tip.
Damn.
He was a very rich slaver. I think he was of both Omani Arab and then Swahili descent. I think one of his parents or his grandparents was an Omani Arab.
Mm.
Yeah, and he was very rich. He made a lot of money from the slave trade. So one thing the Swahilis loved to do with the slaves that they captured was plantations. So in the mid to late 1800s, the Swahili, in the 1800s, from the 1800s, the Swahilis started to build plantations. The Swahili and Arabs, because some of the sultanates in the Swahili area were actually ruled by Arabs.
Okay.
Like Arab, pure Arabs, not
not Swahili Arabs, like pure Arabs.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Pure Arabs. And one thing so both of them would do was they had these plantations, especially on the islands of Zanzibar and Pemba.
Okay.
And so yes, they imported a lot of slaves to take care of these plantations and whatnot. So in Swahililand, that was one of the main uses of slaves. Now, another use of slaves that they captured was obviously for profit, because you sell them to somewhere else and then, you know, you get money.
Damn.
But another thing they also use slaves for. When you're a man's male slave and a female slave, your roles can vary, of course. The female slave is expected to help with things like cooking and, you know, all of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
The basic stuff. And when I was reading a lot about how the slavery worked in East in Africa, I couldn't help but think of how much it resembled slavery in the Americas. And I mean, the USA.
Like the whole plantation. It was.
The whole plantation being run. And in the Swahili land too, they had these people, these slaves, who were in charge of the other slaves on the plantation, right? And yeah, in the Americas, they had the exact same thing over there. You know, the slave who is allowed to go indoors to the master's house,
yes.
All of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very similar thing mirrored in the Swahili land, right? Aside that, and the other basic things where they had slaves, maybe the slaves were in charge of sewing clothes, doing certain basic things around the house. One very interesting thing that I saw was that female slaves were one of the things they were expected to do. There was a group of female slaves called the Masomo. They were expected to act as ritual specialists.
Huh? Wait, what?
And they... Wait, hold on. Let me put it here. They oversaw female rites of passages. So, for those of you who don't know, in most parts of Africa, if not the whole of it, pre-modern era, we had these rites of passages where when a child is moving from childhood to adulthood, you know, the child goes through all of, adolescence, all of those kind of things. And even in parts where Islam was adopted, they didn't let go of these practices, of course. Of course, the Swahili still had those things. And the initiation rituals they had and all of this kind of thing. But one thing that they had, which was very interesting to me, was, you see, the Swahili were Muslim, and the higher status, those with the higher status in society, those who could afford slaves and all of those kind of things, they were seen as special. You know, you're rich, it's the same thing. If you're rich, you're seen as special.
Yeah.
And the only thing is that back then, if you were rich, you were also sort of seen as devout in a sense. So, an Orthodox Muslim family, right? A woman, the mother in that family, let's say the matriarch in that family, she has a daughter. Her daughter cannot, her daughter is growing up. And at this point in time, kids get married early, or they get betrothed early. They are taught certain things when they hit adolescence, and then, you know, they get married off at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So the mother teaches the child certain things. But these slaves, called the Masomo, were the ones in charge of teaching the child, or the girl, the girl who's growing up, how to satisfy her husband.
Oh, what?
Okay. Because, yes, and from what I was seeing, it looked like something that the mother would have done, but the mother is a Muslim, so it's kind of like crude for her to go and teach her daughter those kind of things. So these slaves were the ones who taught their daughters how to do it.
I see. So basically, like, sex education was outsourced to the slaves.
Yeah, they outsourced their sex education.
Wow, that's
wild. So I haven't watched, I didn't watch a lot of Game of Thrones, but one part that I did watch was, PG-13 this part. But what was her name? Emilia Clarke's character, when she first met Khal Drogo, I think there was a slave who was teaching her how to please him.
Yes,
like she was telling her what to do and all
she
those kind
of
things.
She was taught by one of the Dothraki slaves how to...
Right.
Time.
So something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So something like that, I guess. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I don't know how deep the teaching went, though. They didn't speak about that. So yeah. These are some, we, of course, we can't go into details. We can spend 2 hours talking about slavery right, on the East African coast. But it was very fascinating, some of the things, because you can see clearly in back then, the slaves on that, on the East African coast, they had very little rights or freedoms. In fact, you were not allowed to call a free man by his name if you were a slave.
Oh.
You were supposed to call them Bwana. Or Mwinyi, meaning master.
Interesting.
So you can't call a free man by his name. Yeah. And you know how in different parts of Eastern Africa, the whole when you give birth to a child, is a child a slave or they're free? It differs.
Okay.
And in the coastal side, what happened was if a free man and a slave woman give birth, the child becomes a half slave.
Wait, so there's like half...
You are confused.
Yeah. Half slave.
Let me continue.
I see.
Yeah. That, so what happens is that the child is still a slave, but he can't be sold by his master.
Oh.
And he can easily gain freedom.
Oh, so
you know, he can be told, you have to do this, that, and gain freedom.
I see. I was actually going to ask about emancipation paths for East African slaves, since we discussed Ooh. That for West Africa.
Right. We'll get there. And so that's if it was a free woman and then a male slave who got married, the child is free automatically.
Oh, wait, that's interesting. Free woman,
yeah,
male because slave,
yeah,
free
yeah.
child.
Now let me tell you why. And this actually seems to be something that I would probably say has run through all of the slavery areas that we've looked at.
Okay.
Because the fear was this: if you are a male slave and you give birth,
mm-hmm.
right? If you are the child of a male slave, let me do it that. You have no claim to anything because your father has nothing.
Okay.
You get it?
Yes.
So that's the reason in so far almost every culture I've covered so far on this thing. The child of a male slave has no rights. He becomes a slave because you can't claim anything because your father has no rights.
Mm-hmm.
But if your father is a free man, in certain cultures, that's when you can claim something, right?
Okay.
But if your mother is a slave, you can still inherit from your father's end because your father has something to give you.
Mm-hmm.
And in a patriarchal society, that's a lot of the case. But if your mother is a free woman and your father is a slave, your mother's family has wealth.
Yes.
So once your mother's family claims you, you're fine. You're good to go.
Ah, damn.
Get it? Yeah.
Oh,
so it's good. It's better for that to be the case. Hmm. So I think let me speak in broader terms.
Yeah.
As well, I think one thing I did with the West African episode was I broadened it by telling you the fates you had when you became a slave, right?
Yes.
So now that we've spoken about, to some degree, the slavery on East African coast, let's broaden it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you became a slave in East Africa, unlike West Africa, where there was a very high chance that you would die.
Yes. ritual killings or war.
Yeah, exactly. It seems the chances of dying in East Africa were lower.
Okay.
Not because they didn't do ritual killings. They did ritual killings.
Mm.
But the ritual killings were much less. You know, they were fewer than what we saw in West Africa. And also, if you were a slave in East Africa, you could actually also become be employed in an army. Like, you know, you'd be made to serve in an army.
Okay.
And that was something that was so far in all the regions I've seen, whether in the Horn of Africa, Great Lakes area, coastal area, wherever it is, it seems that it was a thing. If you were a slave, there was a fair chance that you'd become someone's bodyguard or, you know, you'd serve as a soldier in someone's army. So one interesting thing is when I was looking at the slavery in Uganda, the author actually said, so it was actually fairly common that someone would be captured as a slave from one kingdom and... in a few years' time, he finds himself fighting against his own people.
Same people, yes.
Yeah, but it wasn't, you know, it was such a normalized thing that, yeah, you know, he's just going to do it. Mm. He's just going to fight because it's his duty. That's what he has to do. he gets it. That's a degree to which slavery was normalized.
Damn, this thing again.
Yeah, this thing again. There was that side of things. And also, like, just like West Africa, death was one option. Another option was emancipation. But emancipation in East Africa seems to be more, it seems to have less of a pathway. So I don't know if you recall, but in East Africa, in West Africa, one of the things was that you could work your way out of slavery,
yeah,
or you could buy your freedom for a period of time. Exactly. And all of those kind of things. But in East Africa, it seems it was not so easy to do those things. Because for one thing, around the coastal area, if you wanted your master to, you know, set you free, your master would have to write a document of freedom. Now I'm talking about the Swahili side of things. Your master would write a document of freedom, but they don't just do that, you know. They did that if, you know, you've served for a long time and, you know, they're like, oh, I trust you, what, you know, you're not going to try anything funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, Charlie, take your freedom. Just work for me still.
Mm. I see.
Or maybe the slave master has gone to Mecca and he has come back. Or, you know, before he's going to Mecca, he's feeling good. He's like, oh, let me give this guy his freedom kind of thing. And yeah, he'll give you your freedom. In other parts of Africa, it was also very similar, where really the way you become free is your master actually making you free, right? I think, what's that? Yeah, your master just declaring that you are free. I don't think I saw any structure in terms of you're able to do this for a number of years and you're free, except in one instance, for the coastal areas, where if you're a slave born, if either of your parents, right, was a slave that was born in the coastal town, you have a number of years that you work as a slave, and then you can, you know, become a free man. But even when you become a free man, you're still sort of bound to your master. Like, you can't, you work for your master. Mm. I think it's just that you become a serf. So you get food from the land, you're off your master, you work on it, all of that thing. But you're just that you're not really a slave anymore.
I see. I guess it's, I mean, because especially if you're a kid and this is, if your master's place is all you've ever known, I wonder how many years you'd be working before you get free. But then I'm guessing even when you're free, it's like it's just more comfortable staying there anyway. So
probably. And for a lot of these people, you know, they've been disconnected from their homelands.
Yeah.
So there's no really option like, oh, let me go back kind of thing. Mm. Yeah. So then there's a third thing where, you know, if you're a slave, you're a slave perpetually till you die. So now, I spoke about how you can become a slave, right? Let me just add some more things to that. To become a slave, right, I mentioned, of course, the wars and slave raids were the most common ones in throughout all of Africa. And another thing was punishment for crimes, perhaps adultery or witchcraft. Two of the things for that were, you know, slavery. Punishment.
Adultery. And
the witchcraft one is kind of funny to me. Yeah. Okay. So, you know how a lot of the time, one thing that a lot of Africans like to say is that Africans don't know what, you know, we do believe that, you know, witchcraft and all of those things exist. And a lot of the time people talk about, oh, that's all nonsense, because how could you let the white man dominate you if you have, you know, access to supernatural powers and whatnot. But yeah, you have people who are witches and being made slaves. So
it's
like, it's very clear that, yeah, because if they were superpowered, they would obviously not be slaves. They would escape with it, right?
Yes.
So it's like, if someone is accused of being a witch and they are made a slave, it's because they believe that this person needs certain things to be able to do certain, to be able to perform certain things or perform certain abilities. So I guess the thinking is, if you can keep whatever it is that this person needs away from them, you're fine. That's at least one side of things.
Sheesh.
Right. Okay. So that's just a slight expansion on the witchcraft part. Of course, another way, very common, you become a slave is debt settlement. You don't have money to settle your debt, and then, you know, you become a slave. And one funny thing I saw in, I mentioned one people group in, around Tanzania, who were one of the dominant slavers as well, the Unyamwezi.
Mm-hmm.
It said that you could use a human being as a security for a loan.
Hey, so like,
if I want to, if I want to get some money from someone, I'll take you, Sarah, and use you as a security for the loan.
Hey, that's crazy.
Yes, so yeah, you work for the guy until I pay him off. Hey. If not, he keeps you forever. So another thing is in East Africa, one thing that seemed to be common was slave auctions, where they get slaves. They have like these slave markets, and then, you know, they put up the slaves, and you're able to bid on the slaves and whatnot. And yeah, so funny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so one part I haven't really talked about so far is the Horn of Africa,
mm-hmm.
right? In the Horn of Africa, to, you know, being a slave was mainly slave raiding and all of those kind of things.
Okay.
In so far from what I've seen in most parts of East Africa, right? Perhaps except the Swahili areas, women slaves were preferred over the male slaves.
That's interesting.
Oh wait, before I move on that one.
Uh-huh.
Before I move on that one, I forgot. Another way you could become a slave in East Africa was if your parents give you out to a chief or a king in hope of getting favors. And this was something that was practiced in an area around modern day Uganda, the Buganda Kingdom. So if your parents want, you know, they're hoping to attract favors from one of the kings or something, they'll be like, oh yeah, this is my son, you know, keep him for a while, kind of thing. Ah. You're a slave, just like that.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Charlie.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, one fascinating thing I did see was that in East Africa, the region where you were least likely to meet a slave was the place, modern day Burundi.
Burundi.
Which was fascinating. So one account of I think it was a German guy. He went through parts of East Africa, and he commented that in Burundi, unlike the other places that he had been to, in Burundi, you don't really see slaves around. It's, you know, it's harder to see a slave, because in other parts that he had been to, you know, you just get there and, oh yeah, slave. Because there were parts of the East Africa you go to where the slave population is about half in a town.
Oh,
you go to a town and like half the people there are slaves.
I think
very similar to like West Africa in that sense.
Where some towns even had more slaves than freemen.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Some towns had more slaves than free people in West Africa. I think I saw an estimate for that as well in Pemba in East Africa on the Swahili coast that at some point there were more slaves than free men there.
Wow.
Crazy. Yeah. Anyway. So that's just, by the way, I was talking about the Horn of Africa side of things.
Mm.
So in the Horn of Africa too, you know, you become slave the normal ways. But one thing was fascinating about the dynamic over there. So in the Horn of Africa, you had basically three religious groups.
Mm.
You had the Muslims, which is normal.
Yes.
You had the African traditional religions,
mm-hmm.
which is normal. Then you had the Christians,
mm-hmm.
which is not normal for Africa at that point in time. I'm talking about Middle Ages to the 1800s right now.
Okay.
Right. Christianity really didn't dominate any part of Africa at that point, except northern Ethiopia and then Eritrea. So these areas were dominated by Christianity. And the people group from that side, there were different ethnic groups, of course. Collectively, they are called the Habesha. That's the Tigray, Amhara. There are a few more. They don't come to mind right now. But yeah, those the Semitic speaking Africans, you know, their languages are closely related to the Arab and Jewish languages, etc. Okay. Now, these people were like in an eternal struggle with the Muslim side of things. So that would be like the Somalis, etc. They had their sultanates as well. And there was this whole friction between them. And there were these constant wars and all of those kind of things. But the funny thing is, despite all of those things, there was slave trade going on between them.
Oh, wow.
And they kept slaves. Yes, they kept slaves. And they also sold slaves to Arabs. The Christians kept slaves as well. But one funny thing of note is that even in the Christian lands, the slave merchants were mainly Muslim. And before you jump to the conclusion that, oh, well, okay, it's probably because Islam is more in tune, you know, it's okay with slavery than Christianity is. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
In some instances, that might be true. But also, these Muslims are the ones who had the connections with the Arabs. Because, you know, same religion. So they're like, oh, you know, we are both Muslims. I bring you slave.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. So there was more incentive for a Muslim to be a slave merchant than a Christian to be a slave merchant.
I understand.
But one very interesting thing is people don't realize how much slavery dominated places like Ethiopia. And I'll be honest, I'm guilty of that, because until I did this research, I didn't realize how much slavery had dominated a place like Ethiopia. In fact, one professor called Ahmed Hassan of the Addis Ababa University, I'm quoting exactly this, like I'm putting his name in university there. So if you want to Google, in case you feel like, nah, this guy is BSing, that's his name, Ahmed Hassan of Addis Ababa University. He estimated that at certain points, the region that currently encompasses modern day Ethiopia, in that region, up to a third of people were enslaved. Like, up to a third of people were enslaved at certain points in history. Like, crazy. Just that whole area.
That's like a crazy statistic right there.
I know, right? And the unfortunate thing is, the people who were the most who were the larger victims of slavery in this point is kind of the same in West Africa, in the sense that it's those without centralized states.
Like the tinier
people. So they were easier pickings for... Yeah. They were easier pickings for slave raiders and et cetera, et cetera. And these people also, apparently, in the Arab world, they were in high demand. Slaves from the Horn of Africa were in high demand.
Did they have like special skill sets that they were looking out for, or what?
So it seems like, I guess they were, I don't know, they were useful. They were more useful, or they were skilled. Another thing is, so from the Horn of Africa, right? You have the Cushitic speakers, and usually the Cushitic speakers are, if you see an African with curly hair, Eastern African accent, a dark skin, there's a fair chance that they are from around the Horn of Africa area or Sudan. And these guys, you know, they liked the Arabs usually liked them from this area, not just the darker skinned ones as well, the lighter skinned ones too. And the one thing that the slave trade around that area, one thing that would happen is the Christians, right? If they raid or they go to war and they capture slaves, they will separate the slaves into two: black slaves and the red slaves.
Hey.
Now,
kind of colorist.
Exactly. If you're not getting it, that's a very colorist kind of thing. And it's because the darker slaves were kept within the Horn of Africa. The people there themselves preferred to use them. And then they were more likely to sell the red slaves. And the most expensive slaves were the red slave girls.
Girls.
So light-skinned, yeah, light-skinned slave girls. Girls, not women, girls. They were the most expensive slave at that time. So they'll sell them to the Arabs or the Indians or whatever. And
okay, so that leaves the Great Lakes region.
Yeah, so the Great Lakes region was very similar to the coastal areas in many instances.
Okay.
Even though the Great Lakes region was not, they weren't Muslims. Well, they had some Muslims come in from time to time because of the influence of the Swahili.
Mm.
But predominantly, they were not Muslims. I mentioned that one of the major slavers were the Unyamwezi. One German official who visited a particular town, he estimated that 75% of the people in that town were slaves. That was around 1880. 75% of the people in that town were slaves.
Only a quarter of the people are free. And they control three-fourths of the entire town.
Yeah, because you're not going to mess around. You're not going to mess around. And that's one of the things, though. Because of how slavery worked in these areas, you were just expected to follow certain things. Of course, there were slaves who ran away, especially in the coastal areas, because in the coastal areas, the slavery was more brutal than in the interior part. Because when you were, you had to work on the plantation, there was a chance that you'd die. It seems like as time went on, they took better care of their slaves. But still, in fact, there was one estimate that said that approximately 15 to 20% of slaves in Zanzibar died every year. And in the 1800s, probably overworking, falling sick, etc., all those kind of things, and then you end up dying, whatnot. So a lot of slaves actually fled. And I'll keep that one for the end.
Okay.
So let's go back to the Great Lakes area. Anyway, the town that I mentioned, this was in the year 1880, right? Now, before we get what, guess what year slavery was abolished in the United States?
I should guess.
Just guess, ballpark figure.
Ballpark figure. I'd say somewhere early to mid 1900s.
1865, slavery was made illegal.
Wow. Okay. So.
Yeah. 13th Amendment.
Yes. Oh, right. 1865, yeah. Yes. So. Mm-hmm.
Of course. Oh, sorry, continue.
Yeah, so I've said, so these ones were all like, so these ones were no longer going west. They were all just going east. What?
So we'll move to that. We'll move to that towards the ending.
Yeah.
Let's proceed.
Right.
Yeah, so the, what do you call them? Unyamwezi side, of the Great Lakes area side of things. So another thing to note is, in modern day, around the area of modern day Uganda, there were a bunch of kingdoms. One of them was a kingdom called Buganda. There was another kingdom called Nkore, and they would fight amongst themselves pretty often. And I think I mentioned that they would actually, the Buganda were the more powerful ones. They would capture the people, and then they would, send them to fight against their former people, right? Yeah.
It's like recycled.
And yes, yeah.
Sheesh.
Like recycled. And it happened a lot. But the Unyamwezi, right, although they had a lot of slaves, they sold a lot of them. They sold a lot of them to the Swahili, actually. They sold a whole bunch of slaves to them.
So like sending them further to the coast, basically.
Yeah, send them further to the coast. And I mentioned that over time in East Africa, people did start to treat their slaves better. Like at the beginning, it was all whole bunch of, very, evil kind of behavior. Like they were seen in some parts as a means of storing wealth.
What do you mean storing?
Okay, so you see how we today's world, the rich people use art paintings.
Oh, and like real estate and property.
Thank you. That was what slaves were as well.
I see. That's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, so like just like in the Horn of Africa, in this side too, slave women were more expensive than the men. And one of the reasons is that the men were seen as troublesome, you know. Men are troublesome. They'll give you headache. They might try to run away, etc. But the woman, you know, you can
compliant, easily more compliant, control her. Yes.
Violence is easier when it's a woman.
Yeah.
And but one interesting thing I noticed about the Unyamwezi was that a female slave could become part of the owner's family. Like if someone buys you in a market, you become a slave. They sort of adopt you into their family. You work and do everything like that, but they don't pay you, of course, but then they welcome you into the family.
Ah,
which is, like, I mean, it's kind of, it's like of all the slavery things we've considered, this is the only one that I would say is not so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still slavery, but at least it's slavery with extra steps.
It's like slavery with benefits, basically. Like, you're considered part kinda of the family.
So it's like if I was a woman in East Africa and you asked me where I would want to be sold, I would choose these people, right? Because then I have a better chance of... But it's not so simple. Another interesting part with that side was... wealthy people or free men, they liked to get married to slaves, and it's because
why? Okay, let's let me hear the reason.
It's because bride price was expensive.
Ah, and with this one, there's no bride price to pay.
With the slaves, there's no bride price. Surely, what is? So. Nah. If you don't know what bride price is, if you are in most parts of Africa, if you are getting married, it's still practiced today. If you are getting married to a woman, you have to pay her family something, you know, for taking care of her as she grew up. You know, so it's like, thank you for letting me marry this woman that you have taken very good care of, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Yeah, but apparently it was so expensive that the men prefer to marry a slave woman.
It's like it's more an economic decision than
but the catch was that once the woman gives birth, the child doesn't belong to you. The child belongs to the woman's enslaver.
Ah.
So if you are not the woman's enslaver, the child is going to someone else's house. Oh. But if you're the woman's enslaver, okay, the child is at your place.
Okay, so so that means people could marry slaves even without buying them, in a sense.
Yeah, I guess. So if your uncle has a slave, he can let you marry her.
Ah, that's really interesting.
And of course, just like in West Africa, slaves could rise to higher positions, depending on how much your master saw you as trustworthy and useful. In the Swahili coast, there were some slaves that would rise to positions where they take care of their master's businesses and plantations. Around the Unyamwezi side of things, there were some slaves that would also take care of their become advisors to chiefs, which is wild.
Yeah.
From slavery to chief advisor.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's like a big upgrade. Almost sounds like the story of Joseph in the Bible.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So anyway, we've spoken for a very long time, so let me be wrapping up with what I said, what I postponed earlier, right? Mm. About towards the ending when you asked about when I brought up when slavery was abolished in the US.
Yes.
A lot of what I've said, right, takes place in the 1800s. Of course, the start slavery is older than that. But in the 1800s, slavery really boomed. Not just in Africa, in the whole, Africa and the Western, the New World, the Americas, slavery really boomed. And It was because people discover more places, more people to trade with. And you have more people to trade with, not just human beings, but also commodities and food and crops. And you need more slaves to be able to increase your production. So slavery boomed a lot in these areas.
Mm.
Now, in around the Horn of Africa, right, before America abolished slavery, the Ethiopian monarchs, the Ethiopian Christian monarchs, they abolished slavery. Yeah, they did. But this was around 1850. One of the emperors, Theodros, he did that. But the funny thing is, he abolished it, but he sort of left it hanging. So kind of like he abolished it, but he struggled to enforce it. So he kind of just, you know, let it go. To be fair, in the U.S., when they abolished slavery, it also
it wasn't took a while to either take it effect. Like, fully,
Yeah, exactly. The reason why I mentioned Ethiopia, one, is that the slavery, even though it was abolished in the 1850s, it took Haile Selassie in 1942 to pass a decree banning it again.
Hey.
And eventually, what put the final nail in the coffin in slavery in Ethiopia occurred after his overthrow, when the a military junta took over. They were the ones who, you know, finally put the nail in the coffin. So I was in the mid-1900s, which is mad to think about.
Yes.
People don't realize it. Yeah. People don't realize how close in time slavery is, even for Africans. This was the thing I wanted to leave for the end. It's there are not a lot of things that I would give the Europeans credits for when it comes to being humane, right? But when Christianity was brought by the Europeans to East Africa, one of the things they did, which kind of has a benefit, was they not and this wasn't like their governments. No, these were independent churches,
religious people. Yes, okay.
Yeah, religious people, priests, nuns, whatever. They gave refuge to certain people who ran away from slavery. So when I said one of the ways people become free from slavery in East Africa was that they ran away. And this was mainly around the coastal areas of the East Africa, because slavery was more brutal there. There was a greater reason to run away at that side. They'll run away in some areas, in some instances, they'll form their own towns and settlements in the interior of the continent, Kenya, parts of Kenya and whatnot. And the one of the interesting things is there is actually a town in Kenya that was that has that roots. Like it was formed by slaves that fled, and they were helped. When they fled, they were helped to, you know, start their town by some European priests. What was the name of the town? Oh, I thought I wrote it. No, I did write it. I don't see why I wrote it. It starts with T. come on. I want people to be able to actually Google. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure you wrote that.
Found it. It's not. It didn't start with T. I was wrong.
Okay.
So a couple of the areas are Koromio and Makoroboy.
Koromio,
Koromio. Okay. And then Makoroboy, Makoroboi.
Okay.
And the funny thing is that I think I saw one part where they said one guy who had become, he had run away from slavery and he sought refuge with the church. He would actually go out and, you know, free more slaves. And he was doing it so often, it became like, you know, a source of irritation for the people, and they tried to attack the church. So the Europeans had to calm everything down and whatnot. But the point I'm trying to make is this: Africans were already evil to Africans themselves, and it was a normalized thing. And then the white man comes, he sits on top, and things still go on the way they are. Till this very day, it's still the same. The only thing that has changed is that now it's not your ethnic group versus my ethnic group, or your kingdom versus my kingdom in certain parts. It's still the same. It's still the case in many parts, like Sudan and Nigeria and Ethiopia. Yeah, there are a lot of places where that still happens. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we are still fighting against ourselves and then letting the white man get away with everything he wants to do.
It's quite sad, but at least we are getting, we are becoming more and more aware of it now, and by the time we finish realizing it or spreading the word enough, Charlie,
everything would be gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so that brings us to the end of this episode of I wish I could go on. I have a lot of things I haven't gone through, but you know, time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that brings us to the end of this episode of Africa's Untold Stories. I hope you've learned a lot, and I hope you've pulled some lessons out of it. There is this there is this thing that the African Americans like saying. I see from time to time. It's like not all skin folk are kin folk or something like that. That very much applies to this one.
Exactly.
So that's a lesson I'm taking from this episode of Africa's Untold Stories. Because one thing I find very fascinating is how much the role of foreigners in the East African slave market was compared to West Africa. There were a lot more foreigners in the Arabians or the Europeans either taking slaves or helping slaves compared to West Africa. Whatever the case is, not all skin folk are kin folk. That's the lesson for this episode.
That's the lesson. Yeah.
Even today.
Even today.
So, guys, thank you for joining us again, really. And comments, yes, we appreciate them. We like them. Please do so. And if you have not rated the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to, please do so as well. And we thank you for joining us. We would see you again in a couple of weeks. And then after that one, we would go to slavery in Central and Southern Africa. We'll combine that one together because it's not us, you know.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, so thank you for joining us. And till next time, peace.
Peace.